In the United States, the rest of the developed world, and even in the developing world, we view smartphones as a necessary fact of life, and the truth is they kind of are. Since the first iPhone, there's been yearly iteration on iteration of smartphones that we ravenously consume. In fact, around 1.4 billion phones are produced every year worldwide. They've become a key social utility and all-around utility in people's lives. I mean, most people would agree having the internet on the go is truly revolutionary. Yet despite trying to be ethical consumers, myself absolutely included, we often mouthwater over every year's new iteration without thinking about, or remembering at least, what goes into these damn things and what material effects this smartphone economy has on the people and the world around us. I'm Daniel Regueira, and this is Techquila. And welcome to Techquila. With me today to talk about the economy of smartphones, I have Mr. Holden DePardo. Hello.
Hi.
Where are you here from, Holden?
I'm from at Responding Fire. It is a weekly video game podcast with my good friend Chad Michael Ennis, who is at Chad Michael Ennis. And we also do now a podcast called Affable Idiots with Chad Michael Ennis as well as Jesse Neal.
Oh, I just saw that.
Yeah. It is insanity. Basically, Chad and Jesse are the same insane goofball.
They are. I've met them.
Yeah, and it's a ton of fun. It's just us talking about whatever. So, like, Affable Idiots is our kind of whatever. We talk about life and stuff podcast. Then Responding Fire is our video game podcast.
Cool. Okay, also with us today, I have Mr. Mike Caputo.
Hey, how's it going?
What up? Okay, where are you here from?
I'm here from Tech247 TV on YouTube.
Cool. What do you do on said channel?
Oh, said channel. We cover a lot of electronics, kind of like the intersection of culture and technology, really breaking things down and how it impacts kind of culture and technology.
Boom.
Boom.
Okay, so Mike, what are you drinking today?
You know, I'm a basic bee. I am drinking Patron.
Basic bee. Yeah. You can say bitch.
Okay. I'm a basic bitch. I'm drinking Patron.
There you go. Okay, so I got this interesting tequila I've never had called Azteca Azul today.
Ooh.
Looks pretty interesting.
It does.
So it's excited a nice for that. Bottle, too. It looks like a nice bottle.
It's not bad. I got it. We have a really fancy store near us that has this in there, which is fucking dope.
And then I have Bullet.
You have a Bullet?
I have Bullet.
Nice.
Like me.
Some Bullet more. Bourbon or rye?
Rye. I prefer the rye, at least.
So, you're drinking Patron, Mike. What led you to Patron?
An empty cupboard.
Yeah, whatever was there.
Yeah, whatever was there. There was nothing there. I'm like, oh my god, I have no time. But yeah, it was basically just
it's alcohol.
Yeah, it does the job.
Yeah, it's drinkable to a certain degree.
Mm-hmm. But it's the Citron, so it's. I mean, it's pretty good.
Oh, dude, the Citron is great. I forgot to mention. So, yeah, I have this Azteca Azul that's gorgeous. And then I have this tangerine liqueur that I made at home.
Oh, wow.
That I'm going to try out here.
I don't know you made liquor.
I'll try it as my second shot. Yeah. I mean, this one I just used like a neutral base and just like put like orange or a tangerine rind in
it.
Okay. Yeah. Which is super easy to make stuff like that at home, like liqueurs and stuff. Yeah, let's get into it. So I'm going to pour the shot. Y'all ready?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's do the damn thing.
I already got my little thing. I already have my awkward shot glass. It's not really a shot glass, but it's literally the best that I could find at short notice. Last time I recorded, and I'm like, yeah, it's good enough this time. It was good enough last time.
I think you need to put your pinky.
That's gorgeous.
Up.
Let me see. Show the camera again. That is fucking awesome. That's so great. I have a similarly fancy kind of thing. I have what's called a Glencairn glass, which is meant for whiskey and like nosing liquors.
Oh yeah, I know those very well.
Yeah. I use this all the time for you know, like making stuff at home. Now, it's super fun.
Now I am truly basic. I just have a glass. I mean, that's all I have.
It's a beautiful glass, though.
Thank
it's
you.
A very
you know,
beautiful glass.
A glass. All you need is something to drink out of. That's all you need.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. On that note. I'll have Mr. Mike count.
3, 2, 1.
Boom.
Ooh. Not bad.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Not bad. Interesting. I need to find out. So, like, Patron is one of those that they are technically allowed to mix it. You know how, like, if it's bourbon, it has to be 51% corn or more? For it to be a tequila, it can be, like, 50% agave or more. So sometimes they'll just add sugar. Mm. And I know Patron is, like, a ton of sugar in there as opposed to, like, 100% agave. I need to find out if this one is, too. I suspect it might be because it says nothing on the bottle, but it's really good. Anyway... Talk about alcohol all day. So I brought these gentlemen here today to talk about the economy of smartphones. Now, the idea is to kind of follow the story of the materials that we're talking about and look at the material conditions of what's happening, right, as we follow these things. Hold on, I spilled alcohol because I am sober. I have absolutely no excuse. And I spilled it on my keyboard. Great.
Shake your keyboard.
I know. I'm just like shaking it out like, bah. Cool. Great start. Great fucking start. So yeah, trying to follow like the material conditions, right? So we're starting with the lithium mining. You know, lithium is in all of our rechargeable batteries now for the most part. A vast majority, if not all of the batteries that we have that are rechargeable in our devices are lithium ion batteries. So... Like I said, y'all, feel free to chime in at any point.
But yeah, I can't think of anything that's not lithium ion. It's like all...
Right.
Even like Duracells and that kind of stuff is lithium ion.
I think like the older shit, like the only thing that's around that's not lithium ion is like super old and it might be like the cadmium technology that they had before lithium ion.
And like that's nickels the only and vinegar, that's also not
yeah.
lithium ion. And science experiments in fifth grade.
Yes.
Oh my God. With the potato with the light, yep. That's not lithium ion. I don't know if you knew that.
Technically, no, it's not.
That's right. No, so the demand for lithium increasing exponentially because of all the fucking products we consume, right? And what I was finding when I was reading into it is a lot of the lithium used to be mined in Australia, but now that's kind of starting to fade out because they're losing... you know, most of it's been mined at this point. And where most of the world's lithium is mined now is what they call the lithium triangle, in air quotes. In Chile, it's like on the border of Chile, Argentina, and Bolivia. And it's more than half of the world's supply of lithium is in these like salt flats. Hmm. And it's crazy. The way that they extract it is like extremely inefficient and not great for the environment. So it's one of the driest places on Earth. And yeah, I mean, like how most things are extracted, right? Yeah. it's these salt flats that are like a desert. And it's one of the most dry places on Earth. And what they have to do is pump something like 500,000 gallons of water per year down into these flats. Like they poke a hole into the flat, essentially, wash it up, and then they take this liquid that has all these salts dissolved into it and put them in evaporation pools. Wow. And from there, they refine it a little bit. They filter it. Put it in another evaporation pool and do that over and over and over again for a year to a year and a half. And then eventually they can extract the raw lithium, which I think it was some kind of salt, like lithium carbonate or something. I didn't write it, but I know it's the raw lithium that they use to process. But it's crazy because of the effect that it has on like the local drinking supply for a lot of the farmers, like in that part of South America. There's a lot of like the world's quinoa that's grown there. A lot of
well, that's nice. I like quinoa.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, quinoa's great. You like lithium in your quinoa?
Oh, that's the flavor.
That's right. That's flavor. That's why I feel a tumor growing in my face. but there's been like crazy. So like one of the other places they mine it. This is where like a vast majority of the world's lithium comes from. But they also are starting to mine it in Tibet, which falls in Chinese territory today, and. There have been some protests, I think it was like 7 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, because a lot of the lithium or a lot of the waste product was getting into their drinking supply and it was killing not only like fish that lived in the river, but their livestock that would drink the river and stuff. Like there were stories of like yaks floating in the river.
Wow.
Which is great. So, yeah, just right off the bat, really great stuff here.
I think that, you know, the inefficiency in the mining process really just speaks to why it's so important that companies that make electronics really want you to recycle them and take back those batteries to reharvest them for future products.
Yeah. And even then, so like they're the two articles I've read, I haven't done a huge dive on this, but from the articles I've read, they're still looking for more efficient ways to recycle them. But right now it's really hard to recycle because
batteries
are one
of the hardest things to recycle on a phone, I believe.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because of just like separating it is the hardest. And once it's wasted, it's hard to like reprocess that into a new battery.
Well, generally when you're recycling a phone, that battery has been charged hundreds of times.
Yep. Right.
It's done.
Right. And so you'd have to like effectively like somehow break it down into its constituent components and like remake a battery if you could, which is a huge pain in the ass.
The one thing, though, is that battery technology has advanced so little that you really could do this, though. It's not like it's going to be a less advanced battery. It's probably going to be about the same, depending on how good the lithium still is in there.
Yeah. There's new research into like non-lithium-based stuff that's happening now. I don't know how fast that's going to get to market in like consumer products. I don't think anytime soon. There's a quote here that I have from a scientist though that I really liked. Quote, like any mining process, it's invasive, it scars the landscape, it destroys the water table, and it pollutes the earth and local wells. This is Guillermo Gonzalez, a lithium battery expert at the University of Chile, in a 2009 interview. This isn't a green solution, he says. So yeah, that's where we're beginning with this economy of smartphones thing. Whee!
Total fucking high note.
You're using a phone, you're ruining the environment. Good job.
Yo, it's about to get better. I'm sure as soon as I say Congo, the Congo, the DRC, people are like, oh, fuck. So here we go. So a key component in the battery is not only the lithium, is cobalt, apparently. I didn't know that this went into the battery. But this is in every lithium-ion battery, not just in phones. So, you know, in every consumer electronic product. And not only that, when I was reading, it goes into things like making alloys for jet planes and several other industrial uses. So anytime you're sending, like, a fucking email or anytime you are flying, you know, you have to use cobalt in these processes. I have the links in the show notes, by the way, for y'all if you want to read the articles. But cobalt is in all these products. And in the DRC, it's pretty crazy the lack of like labor oversight that there is or like safety. There are children as young as like 6 and 7 working in these cobalt mines, even though they're legally not supposed to be. You know, people need to fucking survive. And so a lot, like one of the main dangers is that the mines are super unstable and they collapse all the time. They regularly bury people alive. Fun.
Wow.
There's as much as estimated as much as 35,000 children working in these mines. And these mines are anything from like underground to like these pools that they, you know, they'll take, they'll do like they do in the salt flat thing where they'll kind of like flush out the materials and you can like sift through the rocks and pick up the rocks that look like the right ore that you need. So, you know, some of the kids are going deep in the mines and some of them are like sifting through these like lakes, but no matter what, in both situations, you have like a toxic, dust that is, you know, heavy metals that you're breathing. It's like black lung, but with like metals, which is
That's
great.
Awful.
And it also just like the lithium pollutes local water supplies. There was one article I did not put the notes in here. I should have. It was something like the kids who didn't even mine, the people and kids who lived near one of these mining operations had like huge amounts of cobalt and other metals in their blood and urine.
Wow.
Versus kids from other villages that were like tens of miles away from them. And with cobalt, they don't know like the potential adverse effects on humans yet because this is like some of the first times we're starting to get this much cobalt into people's bodies. So we'll see in
and
a few years how that goes.
On than children.
Right. Yay.
Yeah. That's what they're there for, right?
Yeah. And then so because it's illegal for them to be out there, technically, the children, on top of having like for subsistence working in these mines, they have to pay bribes regularly to local officials. So they're getting like double taxed. They're getting like fucked here. the, you know, so they have to work for subsistence, and then they, because they are children, have to pay bribes to the government officials that come by who are supposed to keep children from working but don't. And I mean, like, how are you going to keep a kid from working when they need to work to survive in this environment?
Yeah.
It's a rough situation.
I think it's an important factor, too, is it's not like these kids are choosing to. It's like they literally have to.
They have no fucking choice.
They have no choice, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There was one. So here's one child they profiled that I want to bring up in this this Guardian article. Elodie, I think it's pronounced, a 15-year-old orphaned by the mines. Her parents died. They didn't say how her parents died. It could have been by, you know, one of the many ways we've mentioned. She was working. There's a photo of her working in like what looked like a body of water. So she's doing the method where they pick up the rocks like by this body of water where they flooded out all the stuff from the mine. And she's working with a literal 2-month-old baby kind of like strapped to her, you know, in cloth as she's picking up stuff. So it's her and her 2-month-old son is breathing all the shit in, you know, inhaling the dust. And the way it works is they're like have a shovel and they just dig through the rocks and looking for the right stones, like the ore that they need. And they'll bring it to these Chinese traders to sell to them for X amount a day. It was something like 80 cents a day, more or less, is what she makes. And it's quite literally these people's only mean of survival. And the Chinese trader thing is another interesting part of this. Feel free to interrupt me whenever, but I know Holden looks speechless right now.
I hate when children are in situations like this, especially because we worked really hard in this country to stop things like that. I mean, we would industrial revolution, put children in machines to fix them and they die.
Right. And, or like lose a finger or an arm or some shit.
And we want to be moral and say, well, we got rid of that, but we support it by buying smartphones and all this stuff. But correct. We don't have a choice. We kind of have to buy the smartphones because if you want to participate in this world nowadays, you have to have one. It's fucked up.
I would have had this
face the entire time.
It's going to just be an eternal face of upsetness. So there's that. And then, so what's to add to that, what kind of complicates all this and is super interesting is, you know, this point about she's trading it to a Chinese trader. The level to which the Chinese are involved in this economy on the ground is really interesting. That is our shot timer.
I was like, what is that?
So it's the Blood Moon from Breath of the Wild that I have as the current shot timer. I've been contemplating switching it up at some point. Okay, I'm all poured up.
After hearing all this, I need a shot anyway, so.
Yeah, there you go. Gonna drink away how upset.
Yeah.
Oh, I was gonna pour the tangerine. Oh, well, I'll do it next time. Okay, hold on, you count.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Salud. This is decent tequila. It's not bad. Azteca Azul. It's a generic ass name, though.
Bullet's still good.
Blue Aztec.
Love me some.
What do you have? The rye or the bourbon? I forgot what you said.
The rye.
The rye. The rye. There. I like the rye a lot. The bourbon, I feel like, is okay.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. I think I just have a proclivity to the rye anyway.
That's fair. Yeah. Okay, so back to the world of garbage. talking about the Chinese folks on the ground is really interesting. Let me read off these points again. Feel free to interrupt me at any point. So over 60% of the world's supply of cobalt is mined in the southeast, I think, part of the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo. And then 20% more or less is being supplied in what they call artisanal mines, meaning that it's not a big company. So the ones that aren't artisanal are like these big companies that are Chinese run. And what's happening now is that the Chinese-run companies are kind of cracking down on the like artisanal ones, where people are kind of like working on their own. And because it's kind of like, I mean, like a turf war to a certain degree, whenever the Chinese companies take over this land, there's kind of like some violent interactions, people trying to defend, you know, their turf kind of thing.
Which one has
from
the
Chinese
conditions?
Company?
Probably the Chinese companies.
I think the Chinese companies have, like, supposedly they're better conditions, but from what I've seen, not really.
Okay. It's just more marginal turf because they want the money, not because
correct.
They care about the kids.
Right.
Again, shocker. We'll say that a lot this episode, too. Shocker.
Yeah. Totally. So what do they call? They call these buying houses, the ones that the artisanal folks have to go to. And then Yeah. Oh, God. Okay. Let me get through the notes. Let me read through the notes. So, yeah, Chinese companies run basically all of the industrial mines. There might be a handful that aren't owned by Chinese companies, but for the most part, it's Chinese companies. And then these Chinese companies, they buy the ore from these people. And for all intents and purposes, like it's, you know, it pays better than a lot of the jobs in the area. So it's not realistic to tell these people like, hey, you know, do a job that's safer for you because, you know, they're doing what pays better because they need the money.
Yeah.
Is the wages kind of paying better still or not enough probably?
Sure. Yeah. And if anything, from what I've read, like Amnesty International and a few other folks were just like, hey, you know, if you, you know, maybe not even pay them better, but yeah, pay them better. But also like if you just paid for like safety equipment, like, you know, they would be in a much better situation, like keeping the dust out of their lungs and stuff like that.
Give them basic masks, right?
Right. And that basic masks will be a theme in the next segment.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's right. So, hold on, I'm setting the timer. There we go. So, yeah, the way it works in general is, you know, whether it's through these huge, they're not called buying houses, but I forget what the companies are called, but whether it's through the huge companies or the buying houses buying from the, like, independent folks, you know, they'll bring the ore. And obviously you get better pay if it's, like, purer ore versus less pure ore that you're bringing in. And these buying houses there will refine them there in the country on site to a certain point. So it's like a crude cobalt. It's cobalt hydroxide, I wrote. I'm not a chemist. Don't know what that means. But, you know, they produce it to this crude point, and then they ship it off to China to additionally refine it into the cobalt they need for the lithium batteries. And it's sold to, you know, the constituent components manufacturers in China. But the quote here that is really interesting, quote, such companies are collectively worth trillions of dollars, yet according to Amnesty International in a report at the end of 2017, none of them are making sufficient efforts to ensure that their riches are not being built on the backs of the oppressed women, men, and children of the Congo who toil in putrid conditions, endure pitiful wages, grave injury, and risk death to mine their cobalt, end quote. So it is a wage issue for sure, but at this point they're being better paid doing this than anything else in their country. So like, yes, depressed wages are a problem, but more so I think safety concerns. I mean, like if they were paid the same, but like more money was spent to keep them infinitely more safe, I think that would be a much better situation, obviously, than now. Yeah, cool. Oh, also just general economics on it. Apparently the market price of cobalt has gone up 300% in the past 2 years. So again, leading to the people needing to mine this stuff. Like the need for it in our phones and our electronics, you know, all our batteries. Yeah.
So it sounds like this problem is only further, I mean, not further, but much more exaggerated when you think about cars that have become autonomous and cars that are, you know, that don't run on, that don't run on, you know, gasoline.
Yeah. Right? So
go ahead.
People are, you know, super into electric cars in terms of like them being green. But if you look at buying a new Tesla or whatever, the Leaf or whatever electric car you want, it takes a lot more of this mining, of shipping it around the world. By the time you receive that Tesla or that Nissan Leaf or whatever, the carbon footprint on it is insane. Like if you want to actually be green, at least in the United States, you're better off buying a used gas car that's like a hybrid or just like a highly efficient gas car,
or get a horse
like an Old Town Road,
a bicycle, a track,
riding on my tractor anyway.
Here's the thing too, is when you put this in the perspective of climate change, a lot of the conversation with climate change is we got to get in wind, we got to get in solar, but to use those technologies, you got to store the energy. I saw the stat where there are, if you combine every single battery in California, I mean, I'm talking like car batteries, Duracells, like everything, it still is only enough to have like, what, 25 minutes of power for the entire state. So we'd have to make like giant battery farms essentially really make solar and wind worth it. But based on this, is it then worth it?
There's one thing I saw when I was still an undergrad, so that we're talking like 5 or 6 years ago. I don't know where the tech has gone since, that I wrote about in one of my journalism courses. That's really interesting in terms of storing energy. Real quick segue to energy. they did this thing called what they called artificial photosynthesis, where instead of storing or instead of using the electricity directly from the photovoltaic cell, right, the solar cell, into the grid, what they would do is they would use that electricity to perform electrolysis on water and use it to store the energy in hydrogen and oxygen, liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen as a form of battery. Mm-hmm. The problem was that getting that to scale so that it was affordable for either power plants or like a home was hard. And also, I remember now, I didn't think about it until now, but I remember now looking back on it, it required a lot of cobalt. So
we're just full, fucked. We're basically just
we're
fucked.
Full circle. Yeah, we're super fucked. So also, like, talking about energy, people don't want to talk about it for some reason, but like the stopgap for energy production to get out of climate change is nuclear.
Yeah.
Like it there's no way around it. It's fucking nuclear. Mm-hmm. And people have to get over it.
And we've also gotten like, better.
Nuclear is way safer.
I'm
gonna do a whole
safer.
Episode on this.
Yeah.
Nuclear is super safe. Well, I will bring you into that episode because I'm very passionate about nuclear being what we need.
And thank you to HBO for making Chernobyl because we really needed something
yes!
to help with
oh
the
my
conversation.
God. Me and Sadie saw Chernobyl and we were like, dude, stop fear-mongering nuclear, assholes. What the fuck?
I want to see it. I've heard it's a good show. But yeah, like it's France
it's
runs
really
off of nuclear, doesn't it? It's like that's their basis for energy in France, isn't it? Or at least a big part of
France
it.
France is like at least 70 to 80% nuclear at this point. Which is wild.
Yeah.
And the rest, I think, is renewable.
Yeah, and then you look at...
But most of theirs is nuclear.
But you compare that to Germany, who's using solar and wind mostly, and they have to funnel in energy for other countries because they can't do it.
Oh, do they?
Yeah.
I was not aware of this. I was only aware of France.
Either. Yeah.
Yes. But yeah, so this whole cobalt thing, I mean, like, we as consumers can do very little because we're, you know, we just kind of are given what we're given at this point. We can obviously put a little bit of pressure, but the responsibility, I suppose, really lies on the manufacturers at this point and governments.
Mike just posted in our chat for Skype here.
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
Yeah, the supply responsibility from Apple. And they've gotten some pressure, Apple. But it seems that they've really done good with that. I haven't looked into it myself too much to really see like how good they're actually being about it. But
cobalt thing, supposedly, like there was one big manufacturer that was like super bad. You know, they were not buying from the independent folks, I think is what it was. Sorry, not one manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to buy from like the bigger Chinese folks instead. But the bigger, like basically like, yeah, it's like, that's nice. The bigger Chinese companies that are on the ground in the DRC are still like garbage working conditions for these people, and they're still getting sick.
But they're
still polluting the water sources and whatnot. Like, thanks.
It's great that Apple's putting the pressure on, but how much power do they really have to do that? I mean, they're the biggest company on the planet, but like, still, like, do they have the power to change that? I don't think that they do.
Hmm.
It's got to be a concerted effort.
Yeah, like if you think about how all the batteries are that they're buying for their electronics, is it more than, you know, the 80% of the rest of the world that's buying or the 80% of the companies that are buying batteries for their company?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Wow.
That was quick. Okay, I'm going to try the tangerine this time, apparently.
Like, first when I heard that, I thought it was Altered Beasts from, like, I'm like, what is that?
Wait, Mike, what was the point you were making real quick just now?
So, you know, Apple might be the biggest company in the world, right? But do they account for the majority of the electronics the batteries that are manufactured? Maybe they do, maybe they don't.
Right.
But still, other companies are probably just as, if not more, complicit in the mining of lithium, cobalt.
1,000%.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, even think of it this way. Let's say that Apple is going to the lithium. Well, let's take the shot and we'll go into this. Yeah.
Okay. I'll count. Okay, tres, dos, uno, trago. Salud. Ooh, the tangerine's not bad.
I think that Apple sells something like a third of all smartphones in America, at least. And let's say that they've managed to get the third of cobalt and lithium suppliers that are super ethical, right? Let's just assume, hypothetically.
Yeah, hypothetically. Yeah.
They can't. Those suppliers can't supply for everybody. They have to go to the other shitty suppliers. Other companies would have to go somewhere else.
No matter what,
if Apple makes a change, it doesn't. The rest of the industry has to go the other way at a certain extent.
Yeah. And like they have made like some effort in the cobalt regard from what I've read, but like no matter what in the situation, the way the cobalt is sourced in the DRC is all fucking garbage. It's all trash. It's all really fucking bad conditions. Mm-hmm. People are getting sick and dying. People die in the mines all the time. So there's really no way around it other than trying to, like, I don't know. I think barring, like, either, like, the UN coming in and trying to, like, make things nice, or, like, yeah, like, the UN, like, forcing these companies that are there to, like, you know, have worker safety of some kind. There's I don't know. Barring that, I don't know. I really don't know how else to solve it.
It's one of those things where every single society has shit in the past that they're not proud of. They had to do it because whatever reasons.
This era's shit in the past.
Yeah.
This is the now shit in the past.
Exactly. And it just, over time, we'll work past it by putting pressure on, to be clear, not ignoring it.
Of course.
But it will get better. And you just got to have the hope, at least. But it's...
Right.
Hopefully, at least the economies grow to an extent where we can start giving them more money. But even then, you said 300% growth in cobalt and it's still not going down. So, like, what do we got to do to get that money to go down?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's a... There's been a lot of publicity on this topic in the past couple of years. But it's a matter of making it... I don't want to burp right into the mic. It's a matter of making it more... I don't know, more well-known, make sure people know what the fuck is going into their phones kind of thing. It's an issue of, we were talking about this earlier, talking about Google off mic, Holden, about transparency, right? Like, mm-hmm. if there were utter transparency in everything that we consumed or everything the government did or everything, you know, in both private and public circles, if there were utter transparency, the world would be an infinitely better place. Because we would know what's going on with our shit and we could advocate for better things.
Totally. Because when we have transparency and it's like, oh, that was transparent and fucked up. Now we know and can have a conversation about it. But if you're not telling us about it, we don't know what's going on.
We can't do shit about it. Yeah, if you don't know, you can't do shit about it.
And I won't go into what we were talking about in terms of transparency, but like when I was looking into Google's transparency, I found they weren't really being that transparent. They said the word transparency a lot.
Oh, but it's always a key word with people who aren't transparent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're very transparent about
I'm sure the NSA says transparency a lot. I'm sure they fucking do. Anyway. Yeah. Yeah, so this is a whole fucking thing, this cobalt. Okay, so...
So I think the thing that we might not be thinking through, and not just the three of us, but the rest, is where you think about the unintended consequences of, well, okay, let's just say we extend our smartphones, we get better batteries, you know, there's other type of provisions that we do. And now the people who are working in these mines, not necessarily that are they, you know, they might be hit harder by not having a job in these areas.
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's so it's not about like depriving them or like it's not about like boycotting it. It's about like conscious. It's about everyone knowing what is happening.
Oh, yeah,
right.
Their lives will get worse to affect if we were to some back form out. Of change.
Yeah.
Exactly. 100%. Yeah. 100%. Absolutely.
It's a catch 22.
100% agree. Yeah. Yeah. No. 100% agree. And also, like, hypothetically, if it weren't to make their lives shittier, can we really boycott everything that has a fucking lithium-ion battery in it? Like,
no, there's no way.
No.
Our economy would kind of plummet if we did.
Yeah, there's absolutely no way to realistically do that. And also, that's a very, like, Luddite, like, neo-Luddite argument to make. And those arguments are very dumb.
And when I say our economy, I don't mean America's economy. I mean, like, the global economy.
The world, totally.
It would plummet.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, Ludditism is not an approach for anything to solve any problems.
No.
I might have made that word up.
By the definition, it's regressive.
Yeah, exactly. It's 1,000% regressive.
Yeah.
So, if we're done here, I wanted to transition. So, the commonality between where all these where the crude lithium ends up, where the crude cobalt ends up is, you could say Asia in general, but for the most part, China. Is where all these end up, manufacturing hub of the world at this point. So before we get into the really cool part of the podcast, I wanted to talk a little more about material conditions that people go through in China. Not as bad, but there's still some fucked up stuff.
It'll get a little better as we go on, basically.
Yeah, exactly. It'll get a little better as time goes on.
There's hope.
So there's that whole, I want to mention it in brief, there's that whole Foxconn suicides thing that people talked about, and those are controversial to bring up because if you looked at like the numbers of how many people committed suicide versus the number, like the suicide rate of the country, it was actually lower than the suicide rate of the country.
I didn't know that.
So it's hard.
So
it's basically
a bullshit statistic then to...
Yeah, as much as I being
it's
kind of like
fucked up to say that about suicide, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I don't know if I'd use the word bullshit, but it's hard to like make an argument with that. You're like, oh, like, that's shitty, but like you can't really say anything about it.
Yeah.
Significant. You can't. Yeah. There's no significant number there.
Yeah. Yeah.
As much
it's
as I
cherry,
am like
it's a cherry picked statistic, basically. Yeah.
When as much as I'm like pro labor type of guy, there's really nothing. There's no argument to be had there.
Yeah.
But where there is an argument to be had is elsewhere. So talking about factory labor conditions, there's a lot to go through. Okay, so in 2018, Bloomberg exposed working conditions at a factory that makes iPhone casings. The workers had to stand for 10 hours a day in potentially toxic environments, right? So we're talking about, again, where there's a lot of like dust, like metal particulate, dust particulate flying around. You know, they're grinding stuff. It can get in your lungs. It can get in your eyes. The lungs and the eyes are the main, in these working environments, are the main things that are hazardous to have exposed. And this is solved by having fucking goggles and having a mask. It's that simple, right?
Mask. Those are expensive, sound, Daniel. Do you know how much money it costs?
A paper mask?
Yeah, it's so expensive.
Right.
And string. So, you're forgetting the string.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So it's not just like the metallic dust, but there's metallic particles flying around, right, from grinding and stuff like that. Machine coolant spraying around, getting in the air, you know, fumes everywhere. It's a fucking factory, right? So there's factory shit going on. A lot of the time in a fuck ton of factories in China, the workers do not have access to fucking goggles and safety equipment, just basic safety equipment. And these are, you know, this is a company that is making iPhone, right? Making the fucking iPhone. Apple is supposed to, you know, in the supplier responsibility thing, I'm sure they mentioned that they're, you know, trying to have, you know, nice working conditions for the workers. And whenever they come to inspect, you best damn well believe everyone has masks and goggles.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But as soon as the inspectors are gone, ain't nobody got masks and goggles. So there's only a few to hand out.
How does that work? Because, like, if they can give the goggles and the mask.
So, because they're deteriorating, right? Over time. And so, like, it's a paper mask. It might get fucked up in, like, a couple days of use. You have to get
a new one.
Okay, yeah. So, maintaining a huge supply of it is the problem. They have enough of a supply to pass inspection, but not enough of a supply to use daily to keep everyone safe.
Hmm.
You know, I'm sure it's tough because Apple can't just be like, we're showing up in an hour. Be ready.
They probably think like more random checks would solve that, right?
It might be very hard to do random checks and something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows? I mean, again, that's really weird to say for a company that has hundreds of billions of dollars in spare cash, but they can probably.
We're also talking about like logistics. Some level of corruption too, right? Like it might be that the people who are working for Apple are Chinese on the ground, right? Like absolutely, and it might be they're like, you know, they're like letting their buddy know who's the manager, like, yo, we're coming to inspect in like X time, like be prepped. I would not doubt that at all.
Yeah.
This is a huge issue because, you know, folks, there was a case of a woman, I think it was actually in Korea, that a woman got leukemia from a Samsung factory. We'll get into that. Oh, yeah, that's here in my notes. Oh, we'll get into that in a second. Apple denies these charges, but, yeah, when they go in and check, the managers have, you know, have the better quality of goggles and masks for everyone come inspection time. So let's see. Foxconn was accused illegally of employing 17 and 18-year-old interns to work 11-hour days assembling iPhones. This was the iPhone 10. And Apple covered it up saying that it was voluntary work for these are unpaid interns. It was voluntary work for them to do it, and that they weren't pressured into doing it, right? So that's
even
a thing.
Voluntary work can involve pressure. Like even if it was voluntary.
1,000%.
Yeah.
1,000. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Like 100%. Even to give them the benefit of the doubt, it still doesn't make it better.
Right.
Yeah.
So we got that. I don't know if this was in China or in Korea. I think it might have been in Korea. Samsung was accused of poisoning its own workers. Around 200 died or were stricken with serious illnesses like leukemia, lymphoma, and MS, multiple sclerosis, despite being in their 20s and 30s. Let me see. I'm going to click the link. I forget if this was in China or Korea. This was in China.
Already? Wow.
I'm sorry to do this to y'all. I'm sorry to make you take a shot every 10 minutes. This is a bit of an insane idea of a podcast. I'm not going to lie.
We went on for like 2 hours once. We were just destroyed by the end.
Yeah. Was that the iOS Android one?
Yeah. Yeah.
We just like ripped.
We got to return to that topic because that topic has evolved.
Yeah. It is evolving regularly.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Okay, real quick point, and then we can move on to cool shit. Hold on, let me move this note. It's not matter. So Samsung apparently uses coal-fired plants and only uses 1% of renewable energy, unlike Apple. So
I just read that and just laughed. I mean, it's 100% for Apple. It's 100%.
Sure. Sure. But here's the thing. It's 100% for Apple, but it's definitely not 100% for, like, where they're sourcing their shit. Like, you know, like,
well, yeah.
Foxconn.
Within the things that Apple has complete control over, it's 100%.
Exactly.
But to have 1% means you don't care. You're not even trying.
Oh, it's not even
the
close to trying.
The technology is readily available to go in that direction. Like, you aren't even trying, and you're a technology company.
So does the article point out which Samsung division they're talking about? Is it like for Samsung televisions?
Good question.
I think it's the phones. We can check. If you want to find the article, it's the one that says factory labor conditions at the top, I believe.
Okay.
If you control find Samsung.
Yep, I got it.
Here we go.
So am I counting this time?
It doesn't say. It doesn't say.
So a couple of things that just within the article or within the topic. So I think Apple, in the respect that if they found that someone was kind of I hate to use the word complicit again, but someone was corrupting an internal employee to take advantage of worker factory conditions, I think that's just something that they don't stand for. Like, they fired people before for that. Not that it couldn't happen, because people are very corruptible very easily. And the thing about Samsung, since they're a conglomerate and make so many different products, from televisions to heavy machinery.
It's like this huge bureaucracy, yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt that they use coal-fired plants, because a lot of their equipment's not modernized.
Right. Mike, it's your turn to count.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Salud.
Mm. I'm sorry. I didn't say salud.
You're good.
How is it, tangerine? Is it good?
It's good. It's at... I made it just straight up at like 40%, so it's strong. I should have like... added a little, like, some simple syrup to water it down and sweeten it. It would be great if it were like a limoncello, like a 30% with some sugar and water to tone it down a little. But for the purpose of the podcast, it's great. Okay, timer started.
I mean, at the end of the day, you these articles, right? Everyone feels great after attending the first 30 minutes of the podcast. But really, what are you supposed to do, right? Do you not buy a smartphone?
Right.
Do you
not
buy batteries?
There's no dollar in this.
Right. Yeah. You can feel kind of like helpless this whole time. You're like, fuck.
Yeah. What's the call to action for people listening to the podcast or the three of us? What do? We vote with our dollar, right? And we don't buy products that are supported by this.
Yeah, this is a feeling, though.
I think... I think the best thing to do is, like we were saying earlier, is to try to like bring it to light as much as possible and make it like a topic that we talk about in the public square. I don't mean that literally, there are no public squares in America anymore, but I mean like we talk about it, you know, it's a mainstream thing we talk about, kind of thing. And we need to tackle the supply chain, right? What's happening in our supply chain environmentally and labor wise. We need to be aware of this stuff. And Apple's trying. Definitely credit to Apple for trying. They're trying infinitely more than a lot of these other places. And like Mike makes an excellent point of Samsung being this huge bureaucratic mess that's hard to like wrangle that shit in. But yeah, I don't know. To answer your question, Mike, I think it's a matter of like trying to talk about it more publicly is all for now. Yeah. We have no power over this.
I also think to an extent too, like, say what you want about capitalism and all that kind of stuff, but I do think there's an element of capitalism where companies kind of at a certain point have to respond and they have to do something about it. And
totally,
so the louder
we
are about it, like, Apple's doing this because people were concerned about it, and they said, yeah, that's true. We didn't need a lot of pressure to do this as much as other companies needed more pressure. We'll do this. More companies will need more pressure. We need to have the conversation.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So,
And so, to your point, Daniel, there might be just a general sense of ignorance where people in America don't necessarily have a keen understanding of what goes into manufacturing, because for by and large, that skill set is not readily present here in the United States, where a lot of manufacturing has been shipped off to other countries.
Right. So people, and skill set is absolutely a part of it, because we don't like talk about it anymore. Like, it not being a skill set that people have, it's not in the common parlance or in the common zeitgeist. And on top of that, I think
zeitgeist, I like that.
I throw that word around too much. But
great word. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
we uh, We are starting to, I think now, be very conscious of like where stuff like our food comes from and, you know, other things that we consume, where it comes from, trying to make it as ethical as possible kind of thing. And there's obviously some of that in the tech world. Of course there is. I wonder if in the mainstream, if there could be more, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, for a lot of people, ethics is situational. Right. They're like, oh, right. So if it's going to cost me more, that's OK. Right. But if it's going to benefit me, I'm going to go ahead and support it.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. Should I transition to the Shenzhen thing now? Yeah,
no, go ahead.
Yeah.
OK, so the fun part of this conversation of the economy around smartphones, there's this again linked in the description below. There's this really good Wired video about what it is like on the ground in Shenzhen, China, where a lot of the manufacturing base for these consumer electronic products started. Obviously, smartphones is a huge part of it. And so to give a little historical background, transitioning from Mao Zedong to Deng Xiaoping, Deng Xiaoping is the one who opened the country up economically. And at first, there were what they called these four special economic zones, meaning it was four places where they would let, not unfettered, but they would kind of let like a free market happen and transition away from the, you know, super, super uber central planning that was under Mao Zedong. And one of these places was Shenzhen, which is right next to Hong Kong. And Shenzhen back then was a series of about 1,000 fishing villages in this area that was, you know, right across from Hong Kong, which is still British controlled. And they chose it because it was next to Hong Kong. And so this is one of the places where a free market starts to bubble. I forget the other ones. I think one of them is Shanghai, obviously, because it was always a business center from hundreds of years beforehand. But so Shenzhen is one of them. And Shenzhen starts developing as this, you know, in the 70s and 80s when they open it up into this hardware manufacturing sector. And it's super, super interesting, the scene there. I find it super fascinating after having watched this this video. And I've read more about it after the fact, and it's so cool. It's made me want to move. Like, if I were not engaged and if I were not in a serious relationship, I would consider moving out there to work in the tech scene out there because it's so fascinating. It's so cool. Hmm. So right now the scene is very like open source hardware. Software is also super open source. IP internationally, like international IP, is not really respected there at all.
It's kind of the narrator, China.
Yeah. In China in general. And I know that can be a bad thing, and it's branded as a bad thing here. But in this case, I actually think like for the most part, it's a really good thing. What the guy narrating the video, who's like kind of like the fixer, as it were. You know, if you're visiting a place, you get a fixer who like walks you around the culture kind of thing. But this guy is clearly an American, but of Chinese descent, walking you through like the markets and stuff. One of the things that he says, just a short quote, he says, quote, "I do think that the cultural tenets of sharing IP is incredibly enabling," end quote. And just this open economy of sharing stuff in Shenzhen is super interesting. God, there's so much to parse here in these notes in this video.
Yeah, so he's absolutely right. The idea of sharing IP is enabling, but it's the whole point of you're taking someone else's work, right? Like, it's a little bit of a false statement to say that. I think one of the gentlemen who ran the startup or the hardware incubator was
the British guy.
He's like, oh, if you just, you know, if someone copies your work, you should be better positioned because you should just be producing better work. Well, that's kind of idealistic because it's not really feasible when, you know, you've been working on a product for, you know, 3 years, 2 years, and then someone all along just comes along and they have more money, they have more people, they have better talent, and whatever the case is, they just put you out of business because they have a better product, right?
Yeah.
You're not even positioned for that. So, yeah. I don't know.
And I think what you're saying now is probably what you're saying now is a very, like, American phenomenon of, like, the big company coming in and pricing you out. I mean, like, looking at, like, Amazon pricing out, like, you know, like smaller businesses and whatnot. It's a very American phenomenon that is starting to happen in China more and more and more. So they're starting to have to cope with what you're saying now. Whereas like before they might not have had to a certain degree. So that probably makes it much more complex now.
Yep.
Because before they could share and, you know, everyone comes up together, rising tide floats all boats kind of thing.
I think in technology, though, sharing IP is really important. Whereas, like, you compare it to, like, movies.
Yeah.
Like, that's plagiarism and stealing if you're, like, copying a movie blatantly. That's a different kind of IP. Whereas technology should be iterative. It should be, hey, I found this out, and I want to contribute this to the rest of what everyone else is working on. And that helps
but even
everybody
in
a way, like, that IP doesn't really work that way in creative fields.
Right. Well, even in, you know, talking about the copyright law of the United States and how it got fucked by Disney. There's a lot of that. Like, you know, the way it should work is when the person who invented or came up with a certain character or story or whatever dies, it was either death or, like, within 70 years of creation, it would lapse into public domain and people could use it in public domain. And then Disney fucking killed that when Mickey Mouse was about to come into public domain.
They keep pushing it back every time. Single time it's about, they're about to lose it, they push it back again.
And I think
next year Steamboat Willie goes in the public domain.
Ooh, that's interesting.
2021.
So Steamboat Willie, but not Mickey Mouse yet. We're still waiting.
Well, yeah, because
Go ahead, Mike.
So I think it's next year that Steamboat Willie goes in the public domain, and as long as didn't mean to hit my microphone. As long as Disney doesn't create new content with Steamboat Willie, it's available. That's my understanding.
What if they do at the very last second?
Well, I mean, that's
featured in Disney Plus is this new Steamboat Willie TV show.
Yeah. And, yeah, that would be funny.
That would be very hashtag America. Yeah. No, but talking about, you know, like, on the topic of how our copyright system is fucked, they mentioned in the video, our IP system in the United States and to, I don't know if lesser degree, but maybe similar degree, the West in general, like Europe as well, is he says, militarized. It's very militarized. And that's exactly the word I feel, is that it's very...
weaponized.
Yeah, they weaponize it against each other. Like, the fact that, he mentioned in the video, the fact that there are companies that exist solely on, like, owning patents and suing people for using those patents is fucking mind-boggling to as people, especially in Shenzhen, apparently.
Absolutely. So, like, to go to Apple, Apple took all their stores out of the Plano Frisco area in Texas because there are patent trolls who work there.
Oh, my God.
And
yeah,
they had to take all their stores out of there. That way they didn't have operations within that district.
Yeah,
so
Plano's a huge patent troll place.
West Texas.
I didn't know that.
Yep.
That's wild.
Yes, they just got rid of all those stores there because they had to avoid it because it's insane. It's weapon.
Oh, shit.
Uh-oh.
Oh, Plano.
I've been there.
Oh, Plano's not a place I want to... Oh, we have talked about this. Plano's not a place I want to go back to.
Yeah, it's flat and concrete.
It's, like, super far away from Dallas, too. I don't know.
It's actually not... It's not too bad. It's no
It's
different.
Like an hour. No?
I guess around there. But I don't know. I live in Rhode Island, and that's the case for, like, going to Boston. So, like, to me, that doesn't seem that strange. Yeah.
Is Providence not cool? You don't go to Providence?
I have more family in Boston. Also, just, I don't know. Providence has gotten better.
Boston.
But Boston has this historic element to it. But it also has nothing to do with what we're talking about.
Wait, so Mike linked this about Mickey Mouse. The internet stopped another copyright extension without firing a shot, as the subhead. Head is Mickey Mouse will be public domain soon. Here's what that means. So
it's 2024, not 2021.
Oh, there you go. Okay. And do they, like, if they do something with Mickey Mouse, is it still going to lapse or...
So I read the article.
No, I'm curious.
So the article that he's referencing is on Ars Technica, and it was from earlier this year. I haven't read it since January, so let me just kind of reacquaint myself with the article. I don't remember the details.
You know, thinking about this, though, while you look over that, does Mickey Mouse really matter to anybody anymore? In the same way that, like, Disney owns Star Wars, they own Marvel, they bought Fox. Like, those are far bigger properties. That
I mean,
way
in
more
terms
on.
Of the zeitgeist?
Nice.
Well, yeah, but in terms of popular culture, I don't know, man. Not really, but...
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to cut you off. What I think we're trying to circumvent is other companies using Mickey in maybe... in amusement parks or other type of attractions where they could try and get people to come in that way. Like, cause it's obviously it's really, really, really freaking expensive to go to Disney, right? Maybe you can go to Warner Brothers or whatever it's called and save money.
And they want to, like, maintain that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That whole public domain thing. Oh God. The fact that they destroyed it enrages me to no end, but,
It's all about
that's good
money.
To see, at least, that Mickey Mouse, we'll get Mickey Mouse back, but the copyright system will still be fucked.
We got Mickey Mouse back.
On that note.
What a benefit to society that is.
I don't know whose turn it is to count.
I'll count. I think it's my turn.
Okay, go for it.
3, 2, 1.
That's a really nice glass.
Dithrovia. Mm.
Look at you.
You like that? I prefer your glass. You know, your
Russian glass slash color. Polish. Yeah, well, Glencairn. I fucking love Glencairns. Oh, this tequila. They weren't going to sponsor me anyway. This is okay.
They reached out like, Danny, we're considering sponsoring you, but you just said
until
okay.
I said, yeah, until I said.
And to be fair, though, they'd just be like, hey, we'll give you money if you say it was good in the next episode. That's really what would happen.
yeah, that's exactly what would happen. And I would be like, okay.
And then some like super fan of tequila would be like, sell out. I heard you say you didn't like it.
All the listeners. Yeah. Okay, timer started. Okay, so yeah, just this whole scene, the startup hardware scene in Shenzhen is so fucking fascinating. So again, just to give some background on the scene, the fact that it was the manufacturing base means that there's parts for things flying around. You know, you could go there and with parts going from stand to stand, if you go to what they call, the market's called Huajiangbei, which is apparently the biggest, electronic components market in the world, you can walk around and assemble an iPhone that is like a first party iPhone from parts.
See, that video is pretty nuts.
For way cheaper than buying an iPhone in the States, which is fucking wild. It still costs a lot for a Chinese person, but for us, it's like way cheaper. It's like $200. It's insane. And so this environment of hardware innovations flying around here because of it being the manufacturing base is super fascinating. And it's allowed, you know, people to put together, you know, they put together like a knockoff phone. And then like after a few iterations of a knockoff phone, they start getting really good at making phones and they start making their own thing. And this is how companies like Huawei and OnePlus started. It's just like, you know, they have access to all these manufacturers right there. And they're able to put together these parts super cheap.
To be fair, though, Huawei is very much still a knockoff maker. Their phone is basically
absolutely
copy iPhone, and in marketing and in product.
So is OnePlus. I mean, like the OnePlus, was it the 6 looked like the iPhone 7? I forget which one it was. It looked identical to the iPhone 7. Yeah. But the whole point was that like the appeal to OnePlus, I think it's starting to die off. But the appeal to OnePlus, at least a while ago, was that you got, you know, like premium level shit for a really good price. And because they're so close to the source, they were able to do really good design, do really good the hardware in the device, you know, like crazy RAM. They always have insane RAM, and source it right there and make it super cheap. And they just shipped from Shenzhen to the rest of the world.
They started off as like what, like $300-$400. And now it's worked its way up to being like $600. So it's kind of like close enough to, the flagships where...
But then so have the flagships, right? The flagships have gone up a little bit.
All right, yeah. That's
like a couple hundred.
Well, all right. Yeah, compared to iPhone. iPhone XS is at like $1,000. But, I mean, the XR is basically a flagship phone in every right, minus the camera.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get an iPhone. I'm getting a XR because it's just not worth the money to go up to a XS.
Also, the XR looks really cool. I just like the way it looks.
Yeah, I want a phone that's in like... I want the blue one. The blue one looks
that's
really
right.
Nice. Yeah.
So I think there's a couple. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
So a couple things from I think the video, which they actually have an entire series on, on cities that are kind of within So I watched the one on it was Tel Aviv today.
The Tel Aviv one is so cool.
Yeah, I didn't finish it.
It's
but
so good.
It is good. So a couple of things, and just I think hardware from a perspective is just largely commoditized. And that's, I think Shenzhen is the perfect example of why hardware is commoditized, because what they're looking for, there's nothing to differentiate on. So from their perspective, let's just try and copy one another. Right. And we'll then iterate on hardware, where I think most manufacturers, or at least most people who value the experience are not looking at speeds and feeds of a hard piece of hardware. They're looking at the experience of the device. Right. Or at the kind of the collection of the devices.
Right.
Which, I mean, here the one thing that I took away was you could buy a new iPhone for £700 in the UK when this was produced in 2015, or you could buy a copy of an iPhone for $100.
Right.
As you see this trajectory of people within, you know, China and these other different manufacturing zones, as they become more and more kind of as they ascend into
middle class,
right? They don't want to buy knockoffs. They want to buy you know, the real product. So
right. Well, and that's where companies like this, you know, like OnePlus and Huawei come in, where it's they kind of like grow with the market, the native market kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we're tired of making knockoffs, and we have, you know, so much experience, and here's a product. I mean, and yet they will buy Apple, obviously, a lot of the richer ones. But there is a native market that's super interesting that grows out of this. And the whole scene, the narrator made a really... at first vague but interesting point about how like Moore's law kind of got caught up and now has stopped for the most part with hardware.
Mm-hmm. With chip design specifically, right?
Yeah, with chip design, with processors, and talking about like speed with manufacturing. And so now it's starting to, like, people are starting to kind of like remember hardware and like go back into hardware design and try to like differentiate based on hardware design. God, there's so much about it that I'm trying to organize my thoughts. Yeah, they're everywhere.
But I think
we're many shots in. It's okay, Daniel.
Yeah, we are like five shots in. But hardware is really, again, it's only half the picture. Like if you look at, you know, even though there's Android phones that have, you know, 8 and 12 gigs of RAM, right? They still offer a subpar experience to devices like maybe even, the Google Pixel that has 4 gigs of RAM. They just, you know, they're you're going to have a much better time with, I think, these first party experiences like Google, like Apple, where they're making hardware and software, you know, purely optimized.
Yeah.
Sure.
But also the element of going to software too. Like, I'm going back to iOS because I just don't want to be on Android.
I mean, dun. Wait, you got to play that sound. Play that sound.
Do it.
Should I say it one more time, then do it?
Sorry.
I'm going back to iPhone from Android.
There you go. That's it.
These knockoffs will never have access to iOS. It will never happen.
No. Never. And there's like, you know, decent like skins that look like iOS, but of course it won't be iOS, right?
No. Yeah. Those skins are always terrible.
The one I saw in the video, I was like,
yeah, that was pretty cheesy.
Not great. I mean, so like, for someone, you know, in a developing market, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like, in a developing market, I would be like, this is actually pretty cool.
Because developing market, it matters. It's status, right? You want to seem like you're affluent.
Right. Or, like, even, like looking like the cool thing from America is, even that is cool. Like, even if it's blatantly not the thing from America, it's like, oh, that's so cool. It's a cool take on the American thing. Like, even that is a cool, like, status icon. The whole hardware scene I found like super fascinating. Like these huge maker fairs that they have there where they make all these super interesting hardware appliances. And they talk a lot about the hoverboard in the video. And how apparently the guy who made it was an American. And so the British guy that Mike talked about, who's like the head of a it's like a seed company, right? That they'll take in people who have a hardware idea and give them like seed money to like manufacture it and brand it and make a whole brand around it. And his whole point was like, you know, talking about IP, he was like, you know, what I would encourage the hoverboard guy to have done that he didn't do was to like, you know, not care about the knockoffs. Cause apparently dude spent like forever in litigation against the knockoffs. And like, instead of wasting so much money and time in litigation is to just build a brand around his stuff and, you know, have it not be the ones that catch on fire, like in that SNL bit. And you would have been golden, you know, like just build a brand around it and have people order through you, have the good brand that doesn't catch on fire and also, you know, has other products, whatever else he sells. I know he sold other shit.
No, but to go back to iPhone again, though, I mean, every time a new Android phone came out in the early years of the iPhone, or not even Android phones, but like just any sort of competitor iPhone, it was iPhone killer. Like that, the brand went out to that extent.
Right.
Hoverboard killers.
I still don't get them. I totally, they look
fun. That's
why
I laughed so loud, just because it was. They're really dumb.
They're so. I see people riding them, or like the. You see those one wheels? You know what I'm talking about? Where it's a big tire, and they have I see people riding those. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Walk, like, be a normal person.
No, they're not even that. Like, there's no.
They're not that fast.
Yeah, they're not that fast. There's no benefit. Like, a bike is obviously faster. Get on a faster. Bike. A car is obviously yeah. faster. Hoverboards, like, I want to look like a dipshit. Like, no offense, yeah, like, but that's what
I'm
it
an
is.
Asshole. Yeah.
I mean, you're I guess huge stupid. Offense. They just called you a dipshit for using a hoverboard. But like,
what? Nah, dude, fuck them. I agree.
So, I thought about buying a one wheel. I should want to put that out there.
So did my friend. So my friend who started the podcast with me has one, and I shit all over him for it. But he, on the earlier episodes, he might have talked about it and how much he loved it. Apparently, it's like all terrain. I don't know, man. I think okay. they're dumb.
Yeah, it's all terrain.
Like, you're a tech person. There's an interest yep. there because of tech. I'm talking about people who are like, dude, like, I got a hoverboard. I'm just like gonna do a wheelie on. Are you gonna like spin around in circles?
The hoverboard
it's be
is
awesome.
Infinitely less useful than the one wheel. Yeah. Yeah, we can agree there. Yeah. He was like, he was so excited that there was like Bluetooth integration on the phone with the one wheel lately.
Yeah,
like what you can way? Control the speed in the phone or oh, something. Okay. Like, yeah, you control the one wheel. It's like speed and other shit. I forget what else.
Or even this. I can't think of the name of the brand. The skateboard ones. The electric skateboards.
The longboards. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of what they're called.
Yeah, there's a bunch of brands on
that.
That
sounds kind
of
cool. Because the thing
oh, yeah, electric longboards have been a thing for a while.
Well, the thing that interests me from a skateboard is I don't want to fucking, like, pedal my foot out all the time and then just, like, skate. I just want to just skate.
I just want to be on a board.
I just want to be on a board. I want to surf on the asphalt.
I don't want to do work.
I don't want to do anything. I'm an American.
Yes, right. I want a cheeseburger while I'm on this board that does the work for me.
Drinking my rye.
Yeah.
That's right.
I think it's your turn, Daniel.
Chevy to the levee, but the levee was dry.
Hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Good old boys drinking risky and wet.
I feel bad now. I was like, you're a dipshit if you want a hoverboard. And Mike's like, actually, yeah. I kind of want to yeah. get a hoverboard.
Well, no, look.
Thanks a lot, Holden.
I will jokingly banter with friends over that all the time. But I don't know. I think it's dumb. Anyway.
All right.
Does the one wheel, like, fold?
No, it's heavy.
So it's one yeah, thing?
Yeah, one wheel, and I think it's, like, 30 or 40 pounds.
Jesus Christ.
Because it's all battery.
Christ. Yeah.
There you go. Bringing it back to what we just talked about. It's all battery.
In all seriousness, I used to repair
battery
phones.
Battery and everything.
You take a battery out of a phone, that thing weighs nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's most of the weight.
It's most of the weight. Yeah. Glass and battery. It's most of the weight of the phone. The metal is nothing. Yeah.
I'm drinking the tangerine now. Right. Salud. Yep. 3, 2, 1, go. It's weird. I did one with tangerine and I did one with navel orange, and the tangerine is good, but there's something about it that almost tastes, this is going to sound weird, like toothpaste. Like Crest. Like the sweet one. Anyway.
Put it
in
the
sober.
Bottle. Tastes like Crest.
Tastes, yeah.
Fresh start selling them. So sorry, it's called a Boosted board. That's who makes it. Boosted.
Oh, Boosted boards are the, yeah, that's the big brand. Yeah, you're right.
And they're expensive.
You're right, homie.
They're like
no,
seven,
they're not cheap at all. Yeah.
$750.
Fuck holy that, shit. Dude. I'll just ride a bike.
Damn.
I'm good. I am so good. I am so good. I will not do that. Okay, so open source hardware movement. Huge in Shenzhen. Is super cool. It's made me want to move there and try to like work in, you know, like OnePlus or like the startup hardware scene. There's that one company that guy, I don't know if y'all saw the whole video, but there's one dude who's like, you know, very boisterous and has a cigar in his mouth the whole time in the video.
Yep.
And we'll be part of it. He's like, I can't do shit with without my cigars. And I'm like, damn, this guy. He works at a company that also makes really interesting products. And they work with, like, he works with Beats. He works with a bunch of other companies as kind of like designer and manufacturer, since they're so close to the manufacturing center. So there's a really interesting scene there in general when it comes to not only phones, but just like consumer electronics in general. Like I said, Huajiangbei, biggest electronic component market in the world, apparently, according to what they said. And it's just a super interesting scene altogether. Like, watching it fascinated me overall.
Mike just sent over that picture of, or the link to the Boosted Rev.
Oh, the Boosted board?
$1,600.
Fuck me.
Holy crap.
No, sir. No, sir.
that's insane. That's absolutely
oh
insane.
Yeah,
it looks
these
cool.
things
it looks cool
these, It looks really cool.
Oh,
that's expensive.
I've seen the scooters everywhere. I've also seen the big scooters that are not motorized that look like Razors, but with like big wheels, like large wheels instead. Goddamn, $750 for a fucking skateboard that's motorized. Son of a bitch. I will just bike.
So this will get, actually, it'll go 24 miles an hour, which is really fast.
That is extremely fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder the battery life on that, though.
22 mile range.
Like how often you have to, 22 miles. There you go.
So potentially basically about an hour, depending on how fast you're going, I guess.
Right. If you're going full speed, you're not going full speed the whole time, though.
No.
So here's the longboard.
I'm going 25 miles per hour.
Yeah, but you can't when you're like commuting or whatever.
Yeah.
Like if you're just like riding.
This is like really for cities. Yeah. I can't imagine. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like I live in a suburb. I can't imagine using this to get to my job.
I mean, like, no. But you know, you could try.
I could try.
I wouldn't recommend it.
Just on, like on the sidewalk, going 25 miles per hour.
Oh, God. Okay, so, quote, to end the segment about Shenzhen, quote, in the West, there's a binary distinction between the makers and the hardware startup. Makers do it for fun, for passion, but when you make it into a business, you should forget about sharing, you should forget about this open source stuff. In Shenzhen, there's very little difference between the two. You shouldn't be stopped from making money out of the thing you love to do. That quote, like, kind of encapsulated the video to me. I thought it was really a good way, like, a good, concise a summary of the video overall, but yeah, listeners, go watch it. It's dope. It's super interesting. The manufacturing sector for smartphones is, I wouldn't say single-handedly, but is at least in majority responsible for this whole scene, and it's super cool. It's super interesting. Yeah, that's it. Anyway,
so what we talked about earlier, as you think about people that live in China, more specifically in Shenzhen, as these people ascend through kind of blue collar to white collar, right? Yeah. Less and less of these phones are being manufactured here because those skill sets aren't present. And you can see it even now.
Right.
A lot of companies
right.
are moving their manufacturing to, you know, Vietnam and Thailand and other and other countries. But that person who made that comment, I'd like to kind of take their, you know, get their feedback in 30 years to see if it's still the same, right? Because
that's a good point.
I mean, it's their feedback is very much in, or their comments are very much in the moment of we want to do this because it's kind of the culture that they're raising, you know, and we don't have that culture here because it's long gone in America.
Right. Yep. Yeah. 100% correct.
Yep.
I'm just going to do like the Martians and the Sesame Street. The yip, yip, yip. Someone did that at one of those conventions recently. They did the yip, yip Martians. They
were like, nice.
Yip. Anyway. So from here, you know, the narrative of the episode is we start manufacturing and we end up where, you know, most of the market is, which is in the West. And for us, we'll talk about the States. But there's a video that I shared with these two that I thought was like maybe a good encapsulation of the American smartphone market and just like consumer market in general for electronics. And it's this video from Vox about how like everyone has in their home like a place where they store like old devices, right? Like they have like their old phones. In this case, he had like some old Kindles or iPads in there and stuff.
I
found that really interesting.
Though. I don't.
So I don't have a drawer for this, but I do have like a couple things that I have laying around. And what I try to do, and we'll get into it later, I try to like sell them off as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. As soon as they're like unused, I try to sell them off.
Whenever I buy a new phone, I sell my old phone immediately after buying the new phone.
As you should. This is what we're going to talk about in this segment.
And I never did it for like environmental reasons. It was just like
no.
I don't need this phone anymore. It's money sitting in my drawer, and it will lose value the longer it sits in my drawer.
Right. Yeah. Well, and the two kind of intersect to a certain degree. But yes, like you should not let that sit there. It's losing value. Like,
I never
think you can just get out of your house.
I never considered that. I'm like, oh, cool. I was helping the environment. Didn't even realize it.
That's right. So, talking about phones, 80% of greenhouse gas emissions that go into the phone is before you even buy the damn thing. A lot of it is because of manufacturing, shipping around, like we were talking about earlier, the raw, you know, the resources. you know, shipping that to China from Africa, from Chile, shipping around the different components that go into making the phone, and then finally making the damn phone. So before you even buy a new product, 80% of it out there. 1.4 billion phones produced and sold every year, apparently. And this is from, I think, 2017. So it's probably gone up. Yeah, that's a fuck ton of phones. It's a metric fuck ton.
Here's the fucked up part, though. You would think, oh, wow, 1.4 billion people bought a phone every year. No. There are people who bought multiple phones every year.
Correct. But also, like, it might be, like, around, I don't know, we can round down a little bit, but it might be around a billion because, like, you know, between United States, Europe, that's about 600 million right there. And then you have, you know, add Japan, developed market, add South America developing, add Canada, add the Chinese market that is developing. So, like, the middle class in China already equals the population of the United States. So the population that it can afford, like, good smartphones already is, I think, over the population of the states at this point.
Wow, that's remarkable.
Which is fucking wild. But it, add to that, you know, we're talking about smartphones, so we're talking about budget smartphones as well. There's plenty of budget smartphones that sell in India and China and elsewhere. So I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of those were for one person, but to your point, Holden, like, yeah, definitely people are buying, like, multiple phones.
I've had friends who, like, fosh, bought a phone, then went, oh, but this new one's announced, I'm going to buy that one. I'm like, you just bought a new phone 3 months ago.
Yeah.
You don't need this. And I'm not talking about tech hobbyists. That's a different thing. I'm talking, like, normal, like, average, what you would consider an average consumer.
Right.
I wonder if that's sell in or sell through. Like, is that the number of phones that are sold into the channel or sold through the channel? Because that's...
Oh, yeah.
Wait, what's the distinction? I'm confused.
Sell in and sell through. So think about, like, when Samsung tells you how many phones they sold, that's how many phones they sold to the people like Verizon, Amazon, Best Buy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Well, usually, though, when they say that, they're saying shipped versus sold.
Yes.
Shipped this many versus sold this many.
Correct.
So they say sold. I'm assuming they're meaning two end users.
Well, no, to your point, Mike, 1.4 billion phones produced, and then, like, the sold part, I would imagine, is probably what you're saying, like, sold subside.
The Verizons of the world sitting on shelves. At least to be fair, like, Apple has no stock really sitting on shelves. That stuff sells as soon as it gets in there. Samsung's probably the same way. You get to companies like Sony or LG, Motorola, maybe they have some stock hanging out on shelves, but I don't think it's probably that much.
Sure.
Because they don't want to make something they're not selling, essentially. Like, they have an incentive not to do that.
Right. So e-waste apparently is the fastest growing part of our waste stream right now. That makes sense. People throw out a lot of, you know, like, old hard drives, old phones, old whatever the fuck it may be. So here's the point of this video, and here's the point of, we're getting towards the end of the podcast here. Don't throw away your old phones. I've seen people do this. Don't do that. Don't put it in the trash, you fucking idiot. No. Don't do that. If you're going to, like, try to toss it instead of selling it, which is dumb, first off, sell it. Someone's trying to buy it somewhere.
It's really easy to.
Yeah, it's really easy to. So websites I suggest, eBay. I use eBay all the time to sell stuff. Swappa. I haven't used Swappa to sell, but Swappa is a great place to sell and buy phones used.
I use Swappa all the time.
To sell the stuff you review?
Yep.
So what's the experience? Is it similar to eBay for selling, or is it better?
So for there's no seller fees. And then when you buy something, like, the buyer pays the fee.
Oh, fuck. I need to start using that. Fuck eBay.
Yeah, so... Sorry,
go for
short time.
No, you go for Mike.
I'm just waiting for the ominous rumble to stop. So, like, for example, let's say you're selling something you want to get $300 for it, okay? Then it's going to tell you that the price is going to be $320 because Swappa wants $20 for whatever you're selling.
That's really fantastic. Smart.
That's better than eBay charging me 10% on the back end. Yeah, fuck
yeah.
Here's my
I'm using Swappa from now on. Fuck eBay.
Go ahead.
Oh, I have a different tactic here. So I use Craigslist. Craigslist works really
well.
So you
sell local.
I sell local. It's never been a problem for me. Here's what you do. You say, hey, we're going to meet at this Starbucks. Make sure that Starbucks is right next to your bank so you can just deposit the money instantly and there's no fear of, like, them coming after you to, like...
I've done that before.
But also, so when I first started doing it, I'm like, man, like, what if they mug me afterwards or something and take the money? Then they have my phone.
No, but if you go in a public place, you're good.
Not even that. Every person I've met, super nice. Every person I've met has been super nice because people are generally good.
Same.
People are generally good people. And I mean generally, like, the vast majority of people are good people.
Right. 95% to 99% of people.
If there's, like, if you want to talk about, like, a criminal or something like that, criminals are not going on Craigslist to buy phones to steal it from someone. Right. That's not their tactic. So I think Craigslist is awesome for that. But Swappa also sounds really great, too, because you could sell across the country.
Yep.
So you have a far, like, Craigslist is only basically the people in my community. I was in Chicago mostly when doing this, which meant I had a huge pool of people that were quote-unquote local. There were, you know, it's a huge area. I don't know why.
The Chicagoland area, they say.
Yeah, I don't know why you can put that in quotes, but you know what I mean. Like,
It can be hard. I'm like, yo, I work downtown. Can you come meet me? They're like, nah. I was like, well, I don't have a car, so I guess we're not doing this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm in Craigslist. Rhode Island now, and I don't have that same pool of people.
Sure. I've used Craigslist in the past, too. So point being, Swappa sounds like the best online option, but point being, like, sell your old shit. Definitely don't throw it in the trash, but if you are going to toss it out, there are plenty of places you can recycle them. Mm. There's, Best Buy has a recycling option. In some states, I don't know if they come and pick it up from you, but there's something like through the state that'll do it. I'm being a bad podcast host right now.
I know a little bit about this. So, I got an air conditioner recently.
Are we doing the drink?
Oh, yeah, let's do that.
God, yes, I have the shot port. Thank you. No, not really.
I think it's your turn, Mike.
Okay, 3, 2, 1, salute.
Salute. Fuck.
Wow.
So I got a new air conditioner recently because my old air conditioner just...
Like a window unit kind of thing?
Yeah, because it literally wouldn't work, and it was 105 degrees today, and I wanted an air conditioner. Wow. This is a few weeks ago, but anyway... So I got an air conditioner, and you can just call a number, and they'll say, hey, we'll pick up the air conditioner. You have to make an appointment, and they'll, like, just like picking up the trash, they'll just leave it out, they'll pick it up. And you can only do that once per month, at least in Rhode Island. You can only do it once per month.
Interesting.
Which is a fine stipulation. They can't do it all the time, obviously, because there's a lot of people in the state. Only so much government to go around.
That's right. It's a small ass state.
Small ass state.
It's honestly an understatement. It's basically a county in any other state.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah,
it's like Cook County.
Yeah.
Wow.
But side tangent, really quick. This is funny. I went to Texas when I was in high school. I moved to Texas, and they're like, "Oh man, Rhode Island. How many days does it take to drive across the state?" And I'm like, "Like 20 minutes, if that."
Wow.
Meanwhile, living in Austin, it took me 8 hours to get outside of Texas.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that was the thing.
Wow.
Texas is immense. Austin is also smack dab in the center of the state. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 8 hours in any direction and you're still in fucking Texas and you're about to leave. So, yeah, don't throw your shit away. Recycle it if you're not going to sell it. But also sell it, dummy. Don't throw it out. Sell it. That's worth money. Get some money, even if it's like $30. Like, I sold a Pixel with a broken screen for like $100 somehow.
Wow.
I don't know how it was worth $100. Yeah, I got $100. I was like, yeah, I'll take it.
Especially if you have iPhones. iPhones hold the resale values really, really well. I have always gotten hundreds of dollars from selling an old iPhone.
Yep. Also... It bears mentioning, if you don't want to sell it, you can always recycle the phones at Apple, and you can also turn it in for credit for things. So, you know, you give in your old iPhone. It's always undervalued. You're better off selling it online.
Yeah, I was just going to say, recycling, they kind of – you don't get nearly as much as you would otherwise.
No, you might get an extra $100 or $200, especially for, like, iPads and iPhones.
Yeah. One thing, though, that is – I don't know about other companies, but Apple does this. If you recycle the phone, you can then get an iPhone, like, XR, for example, for, like, $18 a month as opposed to $33. So it kind of lowers your monthly
– Oh, interesting.
So that's a different factor for some people. That's, I think, worth mentioning.
That is absolutely worth mentioning. But so ultimately, yes, if you're trying to get a new phone, sell the old one online. But so your line of first defense in terms of like trying to be, environmentally friendly is, do maintenance on your phone as often as possible. Whenever you're,
oil change.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Okay. Oil change. All right.
Oil change, battery change. So the battery is the one thing that will slow your phone down the most. Like, you know, within 2 years, it'll degrade really badly. There was a whole thing, we'll get into it with the right of repair, but, There's a whole thing with Apple and the battery degrading and them throttling.
That was so overblown. I actually defend Apple.
It was overblown.
I would flat out defend Apple on that issue, actually. I think it was actually
very
consumer-focused decision they made, actually.
Sure. No, and I agree with what they did.
Yeah.
That said, like, if you have, for instance, if you have the SE, mm-hmm. the iPhone SE, if you put a new battery in that sucker now after a few years of using it, it should work perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm.
The reason phones degrade is because of the battery for the most part.
Yeah.
Android, it gets a little more complicated. but in general, the reason is the battery.
Yeah.
What else do I have to say? So yeah, again, replacing the battery can be super intimidating if you're not like us fucking tech nerds. We are an anomaly. Because, you know, if you open it, especially with iPhone, if you open it, you void the warranty, and it can be expensive to,
and they
if
know.
You open it and fuck up, you know, you it's like everything that's on there, like your bank account, your messages, your photos is on that thing, right? You don't want to fuck it up. But it's really places like iFixit really help with guides on how to, you know, crack it open without breaking it. And as long as you're very careful with it, like 9.5 or 9.9 out of 10 times, you're good. It's really not, it's not that hard to crack it open, replace a battery, replace a screen yourself.
Batteries are tough though. Because like any other component. So I can't say what company I worked for, but I used to work for a company where I did technical support for them. And I had replaced many batteries. There was an incident in our store where someone popped the battery, and we had to evacuate all customers and all people out of the store.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so, like, really,
I think
like,
you already said where you worked. You've already said it during the podcast.
Oh, have
not
I?
This,
okay.
Not this episode, but in previous episodes, but it's okay.
Well, I'll let them connect the dots. I won't say
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. I mean, we can also all... It's kind of implied. The store. But,
Well, yeah, I worked in a store. It was a retail store.
The blah blah store.
The blah blah store. But no, but I do think batteries is one thing where, like, please be careful with the battery, because if you did not know to evacuate from that room, like,
absolutely,
that's really dangerous.
If you pierce it, bad news bears. Yeah. So don't do that. But ultimately, like, you know, cracking open a phone, being careful with the battery, being careful with all the components in there because you don't want to damage them. As long as you're careful with it, you take your time, you know, you follow these guides, you'll be good a majority of the time. Unless you're a dumbass, then don't do it. But
so here's the thing about right to repair. I totally understand someone's not objection, but their desire to go ahead and want to repair their phones. But when phones are not manufactured today for, you know, they're not designed or manufactured with the intent of the device
opening
being repaired.
It.
For like, you know, very few circumstances.
That's a design failure, in my opinion, or that's like a flaw, maybe not failure.
Well, yeah, and I could see that. I could understand that, but I think when you manufacture the phone, you're trying to hit certain targets, and repairability is not one of those targets that you're trying to hit.
Right.
So,
personally, as a designer, of course not. Yeah.
Yeah.
I get it.
Personally speaking, I like my laptops thin. I like my phone small. I like my AirPods. Right. I mean, those have a 0 or 1% repairability score.
Right.
What could you possibly replace with those things?
I know, right? But
it was like cracking them open, I think. Like, getting them open was why it got such a low score, because it was so fucking hard.
Apple doesn't even put liquid content indicators inside of those things. Like, they have no hope of fixing them themselves. Like, they don't care.
Yeah. I guess when you think about these kind of right-to-repair movements, I think they're... Outside of mobile phones or mobile electronics, they're much more impactful. But in the world of mobile electronics, you know, I like my products thin and sexy, and I wouldn't trade that for a bigger computer or a bigger phone.
Yeah, in this video, they show, like, here's a device you can repair yourself. And I'm like, oh, my God, it's so ugly. I would never use that.
So exactly. The Fairphone, let's talk about it. Yeah. The Fairphone, it is ugly as sin, but it is interesting. So
ugly. It's ugly as sin is an understatement.
It is an understatement. But it's so the idea is that it's like this modular phone that's really easy to open and really easy to take the battery out, really easy to take the camera module out, et cetera. Imagine... what was Google's thing called? Project Aura?
I was just thinking about that. That actually looked really nice for a modular phone.
Yeah, and that shit never happened, because welcome to Google. But they always have like dope shit that never happens. But this was, you know, it hasn't come to the American market, so Americans, you can't get it. But the whole point of the phone was they were trying to source things ethically and trying to make it so you can open the phone, replace certain parts, modular parts, et cetera, et cetera. It is ugly as sin. Conceptually, I really like it, though, and it deserves an honorable mention. But so talking about right to repair, let's get into it. So right to repair, those of you listening might not have heard of this before, but folks like iFixit are fighting against this idea of, so Apple is trying to make it such that, like, you know, if you open the phone, it voids the warranty and you can't get it repaired at Apple after that point, right? And they're trying to get that it's in like a lot of their, I forget if it's in the user agreement, but I bet they've snuck that shit in. Anyway, the, like, a really good case is with John Deere. It has nothing to do with smartphones. There's a case of a man who could have fixed the thing himself if he had the part, but because of a software lock on the tractor, he had to haul it out all the way to John Deere. And this man's a farmer, and he missed the harvest schedule, his harvest deadline because of it.
That's devastating. To his livelihood entirely.
Right. It is super fucking stupid because it's like, you know, there's a huge culture in this country and maybe even the world at large of like one repairing their own cars, like getting into the car, getting a new X, Y, or Z part. I'm not a car guy, so I don't fucking know. But there's a huge culture around that, right? And the fact that there is not a huge culture around that with phones and electronic devices in general is very interesting.
I think it's a false equivalency. Cars are
you think
huge.
So?
Cars are huge. Those components, yeah, but cars, are easier to reach your hand in there and grab the part out. Like, to Mike's point, phones are designed to be small. Like, even fat phones would be hard to repair for most people because it's not
the
same thing.
Well, and one thing is like easeability of repair, and another thing is, do you have the right to repair it yourself?
Yeah.
And that is kind of the topic at hand, is that, like, you know, With John Deere, they lock you out of it entirely. You do not have the right to repair it. And, like, with the iPhone and Apple in general, they are trying to push legislation to lock you out of that shit in general. And they are lobbying actively against right to repair laws and, like, third parties opening up phones and repairing them, right? So, like, not even, like, you as a consumer, but, like, someone who's, like, owns a, you know, a company or, like, a small business that will take in phones and tablets and shit and repair them for people that isn't certified by Apple, but will buy, like, batteries and parts from, you know, wherever the fuck they buy them, well-reviewed by the community. You know, Apple is trying to shun those people and have them legal... Ah, fuck. They're trying to have them, like, legally prosecutable, right? Like, have it so that only Apple can fucking do it and they charge you a premium for it.
I don't agree with that.
It.
If you want to fuck up your phone,
right,
you have the right to fuck up your phone. And if you go to Apple and
exactly.
you fuck it up, you pay the added warranty cost, but Apple's just able to help you out.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of the status quo right now is that right now, and I'm comfortable and fine with that.
Yeah.
The issue is that so many of these parts are proprietary. How do you get them? And that's where, like, trade secrets comes into play, and where I kind of start to go... Well, like, this is a conversation Daniel and I had
back
about,
to Shenzhen.
Back to Shenzhen. But
right,
also a
right,
conversation
right, right.
that Daniel and I had, you know, before we recorded about Google and Apple and privacy and all that. Part of Apple's privacy is that on their processors, they have the secure element that I do not want that to be out to other people because that privacy is vital.
Sure, it's super vital.
So, like, okay, so that's off the table. But other things are on the table. And now we're kind of drawing red tape around things. It gets messy. It's really. This is a really messy topic.
So even if you extend that point out just a little bit, you think about Apple doesn't have to lobby against right to repair. They can just design their phones that they're so highly integrated between the components on the device that someone else could not repair them. All right, and it worked the same way as it came out of the factory.
Yeah. I have a point on that.
Yes.
Let's take a shot first, though. I think it's
oh shit! It is, the timer did go off, didn't it? Hold on, I haven't poured up because I totally forgot that the timer went off.
on that point, think about the Apple Watch, right? Apple Watch has the whole system all together, right, or whatever. It's a system on the chip.
System on the chip.
But it's not system on the chip on the Apple Watch. It's something else they call it because it's even more integrated or something like that. Maybe I'm too drunk right now. Who knows? Very possible. We've had a lot of shots already.
Is it my turn?
I think it's my turn. 3, 2, 1.
Boom. Nastrovia, Lachaim.
Whatever else.
Integration of components is going to start becoming a thing in the future. This might seem superfluous, but I'm going to talk about the notch on these phones nowadays. The notch is going to go away.
Where is this going?
Oh, I know, okay. Yeah. The notch is going to go away, and it's going to happen by integrating things like cameras and different sensors into the display itself. These components are going to start getting far more complicated.
Yeah. As we've seen in like some other phones.
Yeah, and they're going to get more proprietary. In which case, it's going to be really hard to say right to repair, but Apple's not going to share that stuff because it's a trade secret. There are intellectual property elements to it. How do you get
around
that?
Sure, but those parts are sold as one whole unit, right? Like, so like the digitizer, if you buy, for instance, today, me and my girl were walking our dog and going to do Pokemon Go shit, and we were both swinging our hands at the same time, and I hit my hand into her phone and broke her screen, and I was like, fuck, now I need to buy her a screen. So I went to iFixit, I found the appropriate screen to buy, the appropriate kit. Because the screwdrivers I have for repairing phones are old and shitty, and the screen repair kit that they have includes the front facing camera module, includes everything except for the home button, right? So it has like a lot of that stuff that we're talking about that's proprietary will be integrated in like the replacement parts mm-hmm. that are sold.
But it's not the same part, though. It's not the same part, and that's where you
this one is an Apple first party part for like $40.
Was it first party specifically? Because I used to do repairs. Yeah. You can tell when it's third party instantly. It is so obvious.
I think. I would assume that iFixit would sell something that is good.
I used to do repairs.
Not at the store, though.
Not at the store.
The store? The store?
So at a location. I did repairs at a location.
That's right.
Daniel, I think if you do repair your fiance's phone, the Touch ID sensor will stop working because the Touch ID sensor is bonded to the secure enclave. When as soon as you remove it, it stops working.
Goes back to that integration of components. They're all tied.
So
together.
I thought it was if you keep the same home button, you're good.
Nope. Because you can't keep the same home button because it's integrated in the display. And that's also not a thing anymore because of the Face ID.
Well, for the iPhone 7 specifically, apparently it can be removed.
No, supposedly. It can't. No, it can't.
No?
It's part of the display, yeah. iPhone 6S and 6 you can.
According to the iFixit.
I just like totally added myself.
It was not. Anyway, so
NDA be damned.
You already outed it. You were like trying to hide it the whole time. And
at this point, the dots have been connected, I think. Anyone with a brain has figured it out.
But here's the thing is like, we're talking about like soldering components together and shit, would take apart my MacBook 2009, and I would do this thing where instead of having the CD drive, I would have like an extra hard drive kind of thing and just like plug it in and be able to attach it to the motherboard, the logic board, they call it, and be good. And that is a trend that's changing with the MacBooks that, you know, for better, you know, I'm not a fan, but, you know, people like Mike like it thinner, like it such that, you know, it's nicer, so it's sacrifices. But I don't like the fact that I like legally will not be able to do it myself or a third party be able to do it.
Yeah, that's the uncomfortable part for sure.
That's what I'm saying with the right to repair. And these rights to repair laws are meant to protect that aspect of it. The fact that Apple can charge a premium for doing it themselves, and it's effectively a monopoly on repairing the thing that you fucking bought in the first place, right? To go back to the John Deere example, I think it's fascinating because it's not a phone, but it is kind of an analogy to this whole situation with the phones. So the guy, to go back to the story, the guy had a part break. He could have fixed it himself if he could have bought the part. They were not allowed to buy the part, this person, and it was a software lock out of the, like, it locked you out of fixing that particular component. And so he had to haul, you know, in his pickup or whatever, haul this tractor out to John Deere to do it first party, right? And so they did something that made it even worse. John Deere in this situation, because the situation got litigated to hell and back, John Deere argued that, to the copyright office, they argued that it was against, they argued against the right, claiming that people like Schwarting don't fully own the tractors that they've bought. They use the equipment under, quote, an implied license for the rest of the life of the vehicle to operate the vehicle. So when I buy the thing,
that's a lot of
I don't own it. Yeah, it's a lot of doublespeak for you own that thing that you bought, motherfucker. And I'm like, fuck that, right? That's where
the right to repair is heading with smartphones. Is like Apple is trying to make it such that you can only get this thing repaired at Apple, and you cannot do it yourself or a third party, even if you have good parts and shit. Even if you have first party parts, you can't do it yourself. It's a very complicated issue, like we're saying.
I think a lot of it too is these companies are trying to avoid liability. Like you go into the Apple store and say, I tried repairing it and I had your component and it's still not working. Well, it's like, well, yeah, you didn't do the repair properly. And then how do you prove that? And then it's just a mess. And yeah, I'll say I've worked retail for a while and unreasonable situations happen all the time.
I have many other friends that have worked and currently work at Apple Retail, and I get it. I get it. I get it. I
didn't say I worked at Apple Retail. I just said
I get it. I get it. I'm referencing a song. Oh, okay. Anyway. But the whole point is just that, like you're right. Like, if a dummy fucks it up and brings in an Apple, it shouldn't fall under warranty, and you pay for it there, kind of thing. But also, I should have the right to do it myself. And I should not be locked out of the phone legally. Like, that's fucking ridiculous. And that's where we're heading in this country at this point. Apple has been lobbying for that exactly and lobbying heavily against right to repair laws in California. They've passed right to repair laws have passed in the following states: California, Georgia, Hawaii, Illinois. Illinois recently. I work at a law publishing company that published a really interesting article about it. It was really cool. Illinois, Indiana, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Missouri, Montana, North Dakota, Nevada, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, South Dakota, Vermont, Virginia, Washington, and West Virginia. And yeah, in all those states, Apple was lobbying heavily against those laws. Heavily. Really, really, really strong. And it's something that we should be aware of. We're talking about being aware of the, you know, the current state of smartphones and shit. I don't know what else to say about it. Those are my feelings. I have feels.
So I completely understand, again, your perspective. The farmer example is a very, very tight or very, very good example. But I mean, these companies are going to manufacture or design their products, especially if they're not doing it from the beginning, with low repairability or low maintainability from a consumer perspective. And that's what we need to change. It's you know, we need to change the mindset of how they design their products from the outset, that they are designed kind of so someone can look for it. The products that they have today on the market are not designed that way, and that's, you know, unfortunate.
Yeah. Sure. I think to build on that too, well, two things. One is go to the whole, like, you want a thin, sexy smartphone. I want that too, but I think we've reached the point of thinness where it's enough. It's fine. I don't need the phones to be any thinner than they are right now. So we can kind of lay, I think we can lay that kind of that thinness conversation to rest. However, these products have a product pipeline of like 3 to 4 years.
4 years.
Mm-hmm. And when we stipulate this law, well, to what extent does it start?
Yes.
Like, does it impact any products they're currently working on? Every company has a different timeline for how they make their products. There's a lot of things to consider. And then also, are these companies willing to have these discussions publicly? Probably not.
I think the paradigm, no matter what, is like, if you buy the product, you have the right to, whether you fuck it up or do a good job of repairing, you have the right to repair it, right? You have the right to crack it open and do your thing. And replace a battery or a screen or whatever, right? Like,
here's the thing too. Even these companies that offer repairs on their phones, they really only offer repairs on certain modular components of the inside of the phone.
Yeah,
of course.
A lot of these things you have to replace the entire device for.
Yep.
Right. Right. Like, if it's a logic board, that's the whole fucking device.
Exactly.
For
the
Apple
antenna.
Products.
The antenna is usually the structure of the phone itself.
Ah, like the yeah.
So there's a lot of components that, like, you really can't repair it. You have to turn the whole device.
But with things like battery, screen, that kind of shit, that is absolutely repairable. I've done tens of times on phones. It should not be made such that I can't legally crack into my iPhone. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's fucking ridiculous.
I think batteries should always be something that has to be repaired, because batteries are a disposable thing. Eventually, they will fail. and you have to remove it. Things, sure. However, like the antenna structure, I have seen many situations where the antenna has to be replaced, ultimately meaning the phone has to be replaced. Do we now just make a modular antenna component to put into phones as opposed to building into the structure of the phone? It's built into the structure of the phone because it's better for the antenna to be that way.
Yeah, yeah, but that's different. I'm not going to, if, like, you know, it's a diminishing return at that point. Like, I'm not going to repair the phone if it costs more to repair the phone than to just get a new phone. You know what I mean? Like, but if it's a sure. component that I, if, like, yeah. I accidentally cracked the front-facing camera, mm-hmm. like, I'm going to replace that, it.
That's also, you know what I mean? That's also stuff too, because it's also built into the display.
Well, for instance, when I had it happen to me, it was the Huawei, the Nexus 6P.
Yeah.
And that component was not built into the display, but I'm sure for certain phones it is. And so at that point, you online, very easy to buy a digitizer that has that component built in. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, direct order from Alibaba or whatever the fuck. And do it yourself.
It's because Huawei stole it from somebody else. That's why.
Sure. Sure, yeah. Sure. Yeah. But if it's an iPhone, like, I can still buy the part on Alibaba or whatever the fuck. Or give it to a third party that works near where I live, that I could just drop it off, and it's a good third party that does a good job of repairing phones or whatever. That kind of thing. Like, their right to be a business without the Apple seal of approval bullshit that no one ever gets. That kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. So, two things. I wonder if someone, if they're the first time listening to this podcast, if they think that we're a bunch of Apple apologists. That's the first thing I was questioning, because a lot of, like, oh, I love Apple going on here. But second thing is that, I mean, really, if you think about it, Apple has a business, and it's their right to try and protect that business. And anyone who comes and infringes on that business, like whether it's a third party repair shop, someone trying to sell batteries, someone who, I don't know, whatever the case is, they're going to try and defend it against it. You know, reasonably speaking,
of course,
so someone who's selling or who's trying to replace a battery is not a certified technician.
Yeah.
Right. And they are compromising the quality of the device that is in their end consumer's hands.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So,
From a business point, absolutely agree. From a consumer point, I would be like, I don't care. You know what I mean? Like, from a business point, it absolutely makes sense. But from a consumer point, if there's this person that's, like, well reviewed, well received, they've done a good job on previous products, Apple or otherwise, like, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
As long as they're, you know, like, well reviewed on whatever, maybe like Yelp or whatever the fuck. But as long as they are, you know, like a good a good company, a good third party, whether or not they're Apple approved, it's like, I don't know.
I have a specific response to that, but let's take a shot. I think you're counting, Daniel, this time. Did I count last time?
Danielito. I think I did, but I'm also drunk, so I don't remember who's next.
No, I think I counted last time. I think you are now. I think
I thought I did last time.
Did you last? I'll count again. I'll count again. It's fine.
Fuck it. Okay.
Yeah. I will use another chance of mine to count numbers. I know it's tough, but I'll do it.
Chance the snapper. Go.
That was a really inelegant way of saying that. But anyway, all right, whatever. All right. 3, 2, 1.
Salud. What's it in German? Okay. Prost.
So, the right of the consumer. I think one of the things that Apple has totally right about consumers is they don't want to think about this stuff. They just want to have the phone, and when something goes wrong, they want to go to somebody else to deal with this. The right
to
repair.
But here's the thing. They have the right to go to Apple. They have the right to go to Apple.
But let me finish my point here. How many people fix their own cars versus go to an auto mechanic?
Small amount. Yeah, small amount.
So, like, this right to repair is really for a very small amount of people. Most people are going to be like, shit, my phone just broke. I'm just going to go to whomever will fix it, which is usually the company that made the phone.
Here's the thing is there are laws protecting independent mechanics, and there are no laws protecting independent phone fixers at this point, right? Like,
I don't think there were laws. This is my next point,
Is
that people like services and these repairs. It's really a service. I think Apple is the clear example here because they have the Genius Bar of, you know, oh, my phone broke. I know I can go to the Genius Bar. That is a service that I have available to me because of my phone. And we are heading towards a very service-centric future.
Yeah.
Of course.
Well, and so two of the things. Sorry, not to cut you off, Holden. Are you finished?
No, that was finished. Absolutely. Go for it. Yeah.
So not everyone lives near an Apple store. right? That's the kind of the first thing.
That's one of the big things here.
And now you can get your, I think your even your iPhone and your Mac serviced at 1,000 Best Buys across the country.
Yes. Apple authorized service providers are a thing across the country. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, I mean,
which is part of that service.
Yep. So it's better, but not ideal to Daniel's, you know.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure. That's something. But again, it's a level of, I don't want to loop it under like civil rights. That's a whole ass thing. But it is,
you know, smartphones just like civil rights.
That's right.
Not a controversial tweet. No one will be upset about it.
So civil rights in the sense of like, you know, not the whole civil rights movement of, you know, MLK, but like civil rights in the terms of like the Bill of Rights. Those are civil rights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Like the right for folks to do certain things or to not be subject to certain things. All I'm saying, and all this is that we should have the right to fuck up our own phones. That's it. We should not have Apple be able to like legislate shit that locks us out of it.
Yeah, I'm very much against the idea of people not being able to put their phones for themselves. Just know there's consequences. Right.
It's the same thing with the cars. Like people, most people are like, I don't know shit about this car. I'm gonna go to a mechanic. But also, like the right to the mechanic as a third party, and the lack of third parties for smartphones, or Apple's actively trying to stop that.
Yeah.
And again, in their business interest. Of course it is.
One of the ways they try to shut it down, though, is by charging so much to these third-party repair facilities for the parts.
Yes.
That could be changed without right to repair. That could be changed by saying, hey, you must offer those components at cost. You don't make profit off of those
components.
That
is a separate issue. But I'm sure that, like, sourcing those components, much like I can buy a knockoff USA jersey that is the exact same thing from Alibaba for like $15 instead of $80 from an American source. Mm-hmm. I'm sure like iFixit and like several other sources use some of these Chinese, you know, manufacturer sources that are like way cheaper and it's the exact same product kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's the difference of parsing that and like obviously parsing that is a complicated market to parse. Versus like knockoff products that won't work the same in an iPhone, but we should have the freedom to parse that.
Maybe
difference.
Companies like Samsung and Apple and all these other companies have to offer those components and say, hey, we make phones. We also make components. And for Samsung, that's really easy because they already make components and then give those components to other manufacturers, such as Apple. I mean, other companies.
On that point, some of this legislation, I think, for instance, the one in Massachusetts in 2013 was one of the first ones to pass a quote-unquote right to repair law, but it only applied to automobile manufacturers. And to your point, it was that automobile manufacturers must supply certain parts, the parts to fix cars, to third parties in Massachusetts, not at cost, but also not gouging them for it. I forget what exactly the stipulation was, but it was something to the effect of like they must sell the parts to these third party, like the first party parts, like whether it be like Lexus or whatever the fuck, first party parts to these third party mechanics. And so similar paradigm, I guess, right? Where like Apple can be legally required to sell first party Apple parts to a third party that repairs phones or iPads or whatever it may be, kind of thing.
Do you know if there's a profit in it for those car companies, or is it at cost?
There must
be. I really
be.
Feel like it should be at cost, but that's an idealistic thing. That
there's probably
will
like
never
a marginal. There's probably a marginal profit, okay. But I think it was to the point where it's they were trying to keep like Lexus and what's the Honda equivalent of Lexus? It starts with an A.
Accord.
An Infiniti is
Accord.
Infiniti
is
Nissan.
Acura. Acura. Is,
Acura yeah, is the luxury
is the
Honda
yeah,
one.
Is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lexus is Toyota. Acura is to
Honda.
Honda, and then Infiniti is to Nissan. Anyway. Yeah. So it was these folks need to supply their parts, but ultimately, I think it was the point was that it wasn't like gouging them. I think it was for a profit, or it might have been at cost. But anyway, the point being, these folks had to supply their parts to the third party mechanics, and that's a good point. I would be cool with legislating that they need to like mm-hmm. supply it to third party fixers of iPhones and iPads yeah. or whatever it may be. I would be fine with that. I think that's a good thing.
I also just think as a whole, they need to not make profit off of repairs. That is the thing that happens.
No profit?
Literally no profit, yes.
That is a progressive view for you.
But like, because it puts an incentive on that company to say, hey, make your components better.
That's a big part of this conversation is that like right to repair, a lot of it is that John Deere is making a huge profit, right, mm-hmm. in this particular instance off repairing this dude's tractor. Apple makes a huge profit off of repairing like the speakers in your phone, the screen in your phone, et cetera, whatever it may be. And that's an interesting point. And I would tend to agree with you. I don't know how that would legislate. It might not legislate well. But
Companies would shut it down left and right.
So do we really know that John Deere makes a profit from a significant profit from repairs?
In this article, the right to repair. If you click where I linked right to repair up top, it talks about how they charge. I was going to say un ojo de la cara, and I was going to say mm-hmm. the same thing in English, an eye of the face, but in English it's an arm and a leg. they charge a fuck ton to people for these things. Just because they can. It's an effective monopoly on repair is the whole point.
Yeah.
And when you have an effective monopoly on repair, especially this John Deere case is like excessive. And it is an excessive example of something that we need to talk about in terms of laws in this country. But it's excessive in the fact that they had to go to John Deere. And because it was first party, they have an effective monopoly on repairing the part because they would software lock the hardware, which like iPhone does not do this, iPad does not do this. This was a John Deere specific thing, and it's super extreme, but it's a good example of like what could happen with phones or other consumer products. Yeah, and like apparently, I was trying to look at the stat. Anyway, having an effective monopoly on it allows you to charge whatever the fuck you want. Right. Mm-hmm. At that point.
The other part of it, too, is a factor that gets considered. When a company has a phone coming in and mm-hmm. they see something's wrong with it, the company benefits from seeing that. They've learned something from that.
You mean post-production or pre-production?
Yeah, so they say, hey, we learned this component might be faulty for these reasons. Here's how we can make these components better going forward because we saw X amount of repairs out of Y amount of devices sold.
Sure.
And that is beneficial to that company. They don't have to make a profit off of it to benefit from it.
That's an interesting point. And yeah, I don't know. But also, like, that kind of point can be gleaned from, you know, even if there is, like, a widespread third-party repair, mm-hmm. The fact that, like, there's huge PR and the fact that people do have to repair it, you know what I mean? Like, people can glean that. And also, like, talking about how Android monitors people, like, if you have to get it repaired, like, there's probably something in there that, like, can measure that metric anyway, kind of thing.
Yeah. That's a whole creepy bunch of nonsense.
yeah. That's a whole other topic. Yeah. But
not nonsense, actually serious stuff, to be frank.
God, yeah, this is a whole complex topic. It's super interesting. God, there's a lot to be said about it. I don't even know. Mm-hmm. Did y'all have anything else to say about it? Because at this point, I'm trying to avoid the next shot. I'm trying to avoid drinking more at this point.
Yeah.
binge drinking to this capacity.
Yeah, that's kind of all I have to say about the subject for now. I'm sure after we finish recording and tomorrow morning, I'll think of something. But
as is life, you know.
Exactly.
Okay. Oh, God damn it! Motherfucker! God fucking damn it!
Well, now we know this is the last shot.
Okay. I'll pour the tangerine just because I know it's less harsh, and we'll take the shot and we'll bid y'all adieu.
Damn you!
Damn you, timer. fuck.
Damn you, altered beast.
Unique New York. Unique Human Torch was denied a banquet.
Why is everyone shouting?
I don't know what we're yelling about. Okay. I'll count down. 3, 2, 1. Trago. Go. Salud. Okay. Ooh. On that note, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you everyone for watching. Mike,
yeah.
Plug your shit. Where are you here from?
I am here from, wow, that was really bad. I'm here from Tech 20. it's Tech247TV. It's youtube.com/Tech247TV.
Boom. Holden.
Boom.
Go.
I am at Respawn Aim Fire as well as at Affable Idiots. At Respawn Aim Fire is a video game podcast. At Affable Idiots is general fun craziness.
Boom. Straight up. Okay. On that note, thank you for listening. Peace. Bye bye.
Was that Daddy Yankee at the end?
No, that was.
's for listening to this episode of Techquila. If you like the show, please head over to our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/techquila. That's spelled T-E-C-H-Q-U-I-L-A. And you can support the show for just $1 a month or more. $1 a month is literally all I ask for hours and hours of work that I put into this podcast on the design, the audio, the notes, etc. So again, please head over to Techquila on Patreon. That is patreon.com, patreon.com/techquila. Thank you so much. The theme song is On the Edge by Unfound. You can find their work at soundcloud.com/unfound. That's spelled UNFOUND. In the United States, the rest of the developed world, and even in the developing world, we view smartphones as a necessary...